You're listening to Radio Aryan.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. The date is Thursday, September 5th, 2019. I'm Andy Donner, and you're listening to Radio Free Northwest.
Blessed warming light, farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Ladies and gentlemen, as Harold so often said, something has come up this week, and as such, my schedule was incredibly crammed, and there won't be quite as much material as I'd wanted for this episode, at least from me. Thankfully, all the usuals will be present. There was actually a question from our previous Q&A episode that we didn't have time for, and we cut to keep that episode at a reasonable length. I'd like to go ahead and play that one right now because I consider it incredibly important. The same comrade, Mr. Simple, sent in another question involving eugenics and whether or not I wanted to critique his understanding of the subject. Spoiler alert, I don't. Even so, I would like to make some clarifying remarks. I'm not going to read out the question verbatim because it was a little bit long and meandering, but I want to make sure his question is understood. Mr. Simple asked about eugenics, the alt-right's concept of an alpha male, and whether or not National Socialist approaches to eugenics would have bred out everything but said alpha male personalities, thus causing a problem for societal cohesion. Overall, comrade, no, I don't see anything wrong with the way you approach the subject, though I will point out you're trusting the alt-right for a definition of masculinity and alpha male personalities. That should, above all else, never be done. Now, yes, I'm criticizing the alt-right, and I will admit that this presentation had to be re-recorded a couple of times, simply because I went off into a diversion which should never have happened because it wasn't pertinent to the question. Even so, this criticism needs to happen, and I'll make sure to keep it short. The alt-right is perhaps the best example of what happens when those recently arriving to racial politics seek to maintain some sort of materialist worldview. No, I'm not here to preach religion, but materialism is, first and foremost, the worldview of the Jew. Communism and capitalism, for example, are both inherently materialistic. That subject, more than any other, deserves the spaced repetition we give so many others on this program, because it's incredibly important to help people shake off the old belief systems that kept them from seeing the truth about race, morality, and all sorts of other things in the past. The obsession with the alpha male personality among what you might call loosely the manosphere, blogosphere, MGTOW, men's rights movements, and in some cases, the alt-right, stems from a bad place, which ultimately comes from that materialist worldview. A lot of the people espousing the be an alpha male whatever really have a screwed up example of what an alpha male is because they're just taking base male traits that aren't necessarily cohesive to society and amplifying them to the nth degree. To put that more simply, they don't have the reference points for actual masculinity because many of the people are what happens when you grow up as a fatherless young man. They don't have the reference points, so they're actually scared of their own masculinity, even though it's probably perfectly fine, and they come up with an ideal version of a very extreme type of masculinity. Even so, in a way, what these people are doing is actually healthy to a degree because they're trying to run away from all of the anti-man and anti-male and so-called toxic masculinity propaganda we deal with in modern society. Masculinity is not toxic, masculinity is natural and healthy. And for the record, although I think these people are scared of their own masculinity because they don't understand it, I do think that they're all masculine at heart. I really do. So what then of the subject of eugenics? Well, you have to bear in mind, eugenics is something that kind of just happens in nature. There are always factors that select for and eliminate variations of particular genes. If we were to say eugenics formally, that would just be the understanding by human beings of this and trying to control the natural phenomenon in that we actually pick what we want and don't want on a conscious level. Really, eugenics is just understanding and applying a principle that already exists in nature. And with that definition of eugenics, I have to point out the underlying flaw in the question, would a national socialist approach to eugenics produce a society of nothing but alpha male personalities? This question assumes that weeding out negative traits would necessarily weed out everything but alpha males. Well, why? It's worth pointing out that the way alpha male is defined by many voices on the alt-right and all of the other pseudo-political entities I've named are really, again, very extreme versions of masculine leadership, which every man is capable of. So, no, there is no reason to think that any type of eugenics would breed out every non-alpha personality unless you limit the population to only alphas to begin with. And even then, because not everything is genetic all the time, society would eventually balance itself out to what you would expect anyway. So, Comrade Simple, the real answer to your question, even though I spoiled it earlier, is that I don't think you're doing anything wrong. I just take umbrage with the fact that you kind of think everybody on the right is in the alt-right. The alt-right was never really white nationalism. It was a bunch of pseudo-racist liberal Johnny-come-lately wannabe white nationalists. At least your wording hints that that's what you think. It may be the case that you're just calling it out in general and saying there is this concept somewhere, and how does that factor into the subject? And either way, I think I've answered that well enough, is that you don't take the alt-right's word for anything ideological because they themselves are a bunch of newcomers that don't actually have the reference points necessary to talk about traditional society, even though they really want to. Another comrade, whose name I've forgotten, regrettably, submitted a very important question by way of RFN comment some weeks back. This is a perennial favorite among the right-wing and specifically white nationalism of the balloon going up, or the collapse, or whatever you want to call it. The question always boils down to whether or not it's finally about to happen. Now, that's an important subject, because if something genuinely catastrophic is on the horizon, yeah, we need to know, except that I don't think it is. Quite frankly, as Harold pointed out, the system always manages to level itself off, though at a lower level per capita each time. Everybody's situation is a little bit worse off than it was the last time this happened, but there's really nothing tangibly major long run, except that eventually we run out the demographic clock and white people stop existing. So, there's always that. Even so, I want to analyze the psychology of why someone usually asks that question when it's not just mere curiosity. And I do want to say that this could be a case of mere curiosity, spawning that question. The psychology is important because, first and foremost, I have to admit that, yeah, it's really, really baffling and upsetting to watch dishonest financial and political schemes go on for decades. It drives all of us on the right genuinely nuts because it makes no sense, yet it is. History has shown us that everybody, not just people on the right, are way too prone to freaking out and going nuts every time some major financial event happens, or there's an event that looks like it's the beginning of a biblical or other sort of prophecy, or our favorite doomsday scenario looks like it might actually be happening, so on and so forth. It's always the collapse, or the balloon going up, or the rapture, or the end of days, or the second coming, or the apocalypse, or pick your preferred variation. It really doesn't matter. Like I said, history shows us that, to date, everybody's been wrong. It behooves us, then, to make sure we don't participate in that sort of speculation, because even if you end up being right about one or more of those things, what's far more important is how you react to it. Especially in the life of the Northwest Front, there has been entirely too much fence-sitting, ass-sitting, avoidance of actual work, whatever you want to call it, so that people can sit and speculate about what's happening instead. Believe it or not, this actually makes a certain sort of sense, because society wants to trash anybody with any opinion right of center, and it's been that way for so long that many of us need some sort of external validation so we can feel good about having stuck to these positions. Remember that self-validation thing I keep asking you all to develop? It's a skill you need, and you need it yesterday. The underlying motivations for obsession over these subjects are interesting, and after having thought it over very carefully and bounced some ideas off of other HQ group members, I have to say that I don't actually think there's narcissism involved here, though there is a certain amount of egoic gratification at being, to quote Trump, the chosen one, because you get to live through the events that you're concerned with. This is especially common in rapture-obsessed varieties of Christians. And no, I'm not bashing Christianity or any particular theology. I'm pointing out a harmful behavior and how it affects everyone else. Please note the difference. The other, and in my opinion, far scarier reason someone would wait on catastrophe to present itself is that they don't think the cause has any chance of succeeding until said catastrophe removes the barriers. I hate to break it to you, but this is exactly wrong. You see, right now, the Northwest Imperative consists entirely of legal, though inconvenient, activity designed to further our long-term goals. If you're not a big enough person to do the right thing when it's legal and relatively easy at the moment, you certainly won't be the sort of person you think you are when stuff gets hard. Several times in recent years, people I've tried to recruit to the NF have told me they're not going to bother with this homecoming, Northwest migration, Butler plan, anything, until catastrophe is right around the corner because we need the catastrophe. Well, we don't. What's so important about participation in the NF right now, even if it's inconvenient for you personally, is that you gather skills, lessons, and reference points to help you make further decisions. Again, I don't mean to bash anybody that has genuine curiosity in the subject of impending disasters of various sorts, but asking questions like, are we getting there yet, as if that's what needs to happen for us to do the right thing as individuals, is absolutely wrong and counterproductive from any serious revolutionary's perspective.
Good evening, comrades. Tonight I'm going to be discussing Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells by Frank Raymond. This is an Indian author who has lived in Canada for a significant portion of his life, and so he writes this book very much from a Canadian perspective and a Canadian landscape. This author posits that whites have unique temperamental qualities that create mellow and well-ordered societies. These societies ought to be exemplars, but are being overwhelmed by Global South. The author wants to focus on how internal states of mind create a condition in which victims are influenced to act against their own racial interests. Raymond explores how pseudo-intellectual academics, in particular, are manipulated by ornate terms and social and emotional in-group pressures. These pseudo-intellectuals enjoy the praise of co-educators, and they want to feel both virtuous and edgy by helping this agenda along as best they can. However, sometimes the victim of these mind parasites don't even know why they carry on as they do. The author notes that methods may vary simply because people and circumstances vary, but the consequences are always the same. It's also possible for whites to project qualities onto people of color, believing that everyone is really the same. This author, who is, as I've said, an Asian Indian, wants to make it very clear, because he has direct knowledge, of course, of Asian Indians, that if a white person would study Africans and or Asians with an objective eye, They would see that such populations, and especially populations from the global south, which are the ones, of course, that are coming in so readily into global north, are really very incompatible with the lifestyles and attitudes of the global north. So the author is going to take pains to illustrate that persons from global south are really individuals who very much live in the moment. They do what's best for themselves, and they conserve their energy, so they only do what's necessary for them. On the other hand, whites work for environmental and animal welfare. It's true that there are times where the author is hazy on the nature-nurture debate, but at the end of the day, this author does seem to believe in a racial essence. This essence seems to be very well-meaning and, in a sense, somewhat childlike. And while this can amount to wonderful qualities, this will make whites, and especially academic white women, vulnerable to stories of hardships from global south, and also to this brainwashing that comes from a kind of brain parasite that the author never quite fully explains. But the author talks about how these parasites really override evolutionary programming and can actually be highly destructive, particularly when they're found in worlds on the verge of higher evolution. So at the end of the book, we learn the scope of the danger when the author imagines aliens on Alpha Centauri who are studying the Earth. And they say that in 1945, the Earth was due to arrive at the realization of the racial state, and how this was overridden by essentially this parasitic state of mind, or this mindset which was already infecting the Earth at that point. And the author talks about the state being a racial loyalist, and how loyalists drink from a deep well, which is place of comradeship. And the author lets us see that this is as much a mental journey as it is a physical one. To these ends, this book is actually filled with dream sequences and also descriptions of mental states. For the first several chapters, this author will really go on and on about the qualities and behaviors that he sees as being highly significant and unique to white people. Essentially, this author makes the claim, and he makes it over and over again in many ways, that white people will do many things that they really don't have to do, but which are very whimsical and pleasant, often very inclusive of nature. And he sees this as an attitude that was brought about and somehow seeped into the white race forests of Europe. Although some critics might say that the environmental attitude that is seen in white people today is a fairly recent preoccupation. However, historically recent or not, it has certainly become very prevalent, and he really fears that the world will fall into environmental ruin if overdevelopment is allowed to run rampant in global north due to the strong influx of global south. Some readers may look at this book and say that this author is disillusioned with Indian culture because he's upset with his father, and you'll know what I mean if you read this book. However, it's hard to ignore the demographic arguments of this author, however they're motivated, and it's also hard to ignore his arguments that countries, especially countries in the far north, like Canada, have very little arable land. And if that land is overdeveloped, it really does wreak havoc on these delicate ecosystems. As I've said, and as I could say again, the book is highly picturesque, and you will get a sense of the grandeur of the Canadian landscape. As often happens with Indian authors, you will find this book to be a bit wordy, and also, I would suppose, in need of some editing. However, the perspective of this author really is very unique. There's a lot of emphasis on meditation in this book as well, which is also very characteristic of Indian culture and attitudes. This is apparently only volume one, so I'll be looking for other books by this author on this theme that will, I suppose, be a continuation of this book. So once again, I've been discussing Sweet Dreams and Terror Cells by Frank Raymond. I hope you enjoyed this review. I thank you for listening. Have a good evening and hail victory, comrades.
Like summer has finally hit. It's getting really warm out here. Coming across Idaho the other day at Eastern Oregon and stuff, it was up into the 90s. It was cooling down into the 60s at night, but right now, even up here in the mountains, it's in the mid to upper 70s at a little after midnight. So, yep, summer's hit out here. If you're not out here making your scouting trip, well, you're missing out on a nice warm part of summer, part of year that everybody gripes about because we're all used to the cooler weather. I even see my daughter on Facebook griping about the heat. Dogs not faring as well and stuff because they like the cooler weather also. Right now out here, well, if you haven't been out here, especially this last weekend, you missed out on the big event up there in the Seattle area. Seafair, where the Navy comes to town. The hydroplane races are out there on Lake Washington, and they have the Blue Angels performing over the lake. So, well, you miss that till next year. So, mark it on your calendars for next year if you're planning on coming out here for a scouting trip, because it's always the first weekend of August for Seafair. Big to-dos over there. I must say that I've always been working and stuff. When I was in the Navy, some of our other vessels there, when I was at Keyport, got rotated over there, plant buoys and do other stuff over there. But the vessel I was on, while I was on it, never got the pleasure of going over there and being part of Seafair. So I always ended up missing out on it. Always ended up having the duty or working or whatever. Now that I'm a trucker, well, I just haven't gone and bothered to get over there and brave the crowds and all that kind of crud. So anyway, well, coming up and down Columbia River Gorge there on I-84, saw a bunch of people out there enjoying their windsurfing stuff out there on their sailboard. Some of them are parasailing and some of them are windboard surfing and looked like they were having fun. Not sure what the water temperature is in the Columbia River, but I'm sure it gets up into the 70s at least. I hadn't bothered to go and check on that. Sorry about that, but I knew growing up in Michigan, water temperature would get up into the mid-70s at its warmest and stuff. That was coming out of Lake Huron down the St. Clair River, so idea where I grew up at. That was always kind of fun. We'd always start hitting the water as kids at about 60 degrees, and yeah, it was a little chilly, but that got into the summer thing. Like I say, once it hit 60, we were waterborne. But But anyway, yeah, here lately it's been hazy, I noticed, coming into the homeland the other day, and come to find out that it's because of a bunch of fires that are going on over in Siberia. I'm going, excuse me, but yep, I guess they've got a bunch of fires burning over there in Russia in the Siberian area, and the smoke is making its way over here, thanks to the jet stream, I guess. So anyway, it's a little hazy, but it does not smell smoky, but it's just hazy. So anyway, all right, well, this is the trucker signing off from the homeland with a load going over there to New Jersey. Glad I don't have to go all the way over there because I've got home time next week. So anyway, all right, this is the trucker signing off from Blue Mountains of Oregon. Have a safe one, comrades, and hope to see you out here on the road making your scouting trip and your migration soon. Take it easy and drive safe.
They say, can't you know? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch old Bandit run.
Greetings, everyone. This is Comrade Jason. It'll be just a short segment for me this week, but there is something I wanted to throw your way. Just a few weeks ago, YouTube had another round of purges of right-leaning news and commentary, the third main round since the noticeably major purges began back in March. You may not have noticed, because even the so-called conservative media seemed to basically ignore it this time. I'm sure that President Trump continues to monitor the situation. I guess we're coming to accept fundamental assaults on our freedom to communicate as an everyday fact of life now. However, this is something we simply cannot do. You don't preserve freedom by accommodating yourself to assaults on that freedom. Last RFN, I focused in depth on Harvard academic Noel Ignatiev as a perfect example of the communist Jewish enemy working from within our society to corrupt and mangle it beyond all recognition. The fact that 40% of university students now support some form of speech restriction to protect feelings shows how deeply we have allowed this rot to progress. In this environment, I thought it fitting to bring back one of Harold's classics from the very first of the Front's videos to be purged from YouTube, entitled Why I Say Nigger. I made this video for Harold in 2013, and it stayed up for almost a year before the book burners at Judentube pulled it down. This segment of Harold's is fundamentally about how it takes exercising our freedoms in order to protect them, and was a conversation intended for whites and whites only, intended for the people who created freedom of speech. But the first principle in a modern multiracial society is that whites must never be allowed to have or enjoy anything that is exclusively ours. No neighborhoods, no schools, no businesses, no social organizations, no conversations that are ours and ours alone. So this conversation, from one white man to his own kind about preserving one of our most important white liberties, the freedom of a white man's speech, had to go. As mentioned, the modern social fashion is all about destroying liberty to protect feelings. In this case, the feelings of primitive niggers, no less, who, given how much societal damage, crime, and bloodshed we suffer at their hands, may be the least worthy objects of sympathy that I can think of. Anyway, as another well-deserved thumb in the eye to all the Jews and niggers trying their damnedest to destroy white liberty in our way of life, here's Harold.
Next question, why do I use forbidden words on here, specifically nigger and kike and faggot and so on? And don't I think I would attract a better class of people if I used all the usual polite circumlocutions? Okay, I went over this one just a couple of weeks ago, but this is a very commonly asked question, and the answer is important in a spiritual sense, so I'm going to have another go at it. And I apologize to those of you to whom this will be old hat. Now, before I get into it, I want to take time out and urge all of you that if any of you out there have not read George Orwell's historic novel 1984, I urge you to obtain a copy and do so immediately. I myself try to reread this book at least once a year. I've probably read it more often than Mein Kampf and White Power combined. Even though it was written in 1948, and even though it describes an older, Stalinist form of tyranny, Orwell's novel explains almost everything you always wanted to know about the world we live in today, but didn't know who to ask. When you get your copy, I recommend that you start with the appendix at the end of the book, which discusses something called Newspeak. Now, this is, in my opinion, probably the most brilliant and insightful part of the novel. It's an essay on the use and perversion of language in order to control thought, and it's even more applicable today than it was 60 years ago when it was first written. Now, this, in essence, is the secret of the Jewish control of our lives. They are able to dictate what we think and control what we believe because they select the parameters of discussion and thought, and they decide what ideas and what thoughts are acceptable and what isn't. The people who rule us don't give a rat's ass about the poor offended feelings of blacks or spics or even Jews and bugger boys. That's not the reason these words are forbidden. What the ruling class wants to do is to control our very thoughts by making us afraid to speak certain words out loud for fear of economic retaliation and, in Europe, legal punishment, or in this country, fear of psychotic violence from non-whites. Our masters want us so afraid to speak these words that we censor our own selves so effectively that we don't even think these words or think about the concepts and ideas of racial difference and white superiority that those words convey. Our masters don't only want us afraid to say nigger, they don't want us even to think nigger or to be able to think it. The wealthy liberals and Jews who rule us don't want white people to think any thought that contradicts what we're taught in our politically correct classrooms or by our left-wing Zionist state media. They don't want white people even to have in their minds words that can even so much as formulate forbidden thoughts, never mind express them. The long-term goal, as stated in Orwell's 1984, is to make so-called thought crime impossible because we will lack even the language necessary to formulate forbidden thoughts in our minds. Now, this is the reason that I use words like nigger and kike and beaner and faggot, because our slave masters don't want me to, and whatever the regime wants white people not to do, we're under a moral obligation to do as often as possible. White people have to break out of this mental straitjacket and recover our freedom of speech and thought, and that first and foremost represents the freedom to say nigger and kike and faggot. Because, you see, that's exactly what these people are. There is no such thing as an African American. There is no such thing as a black person. The term person implies an equality with white people which does not, in fact, exist in the real world. They are not people, at least not in the same sense that we are. They're niggers. There is no such thing as a gay person. There is nothing gay about filthy and unsanitary perversions that spread loathsome diseases. The word homosexual is simply a descriptive term for certain unnatural sexual acts. It does not describe the people who commit those acts. Those people are faggots, queers, bugger boys, dykes. To refer to these people without any negative connotation is to imply that they and their perversions are somehow acceptable in civilized society, and they're not. White people and the defenders of Western civilization have to stop letting the enemy define the parameters of discussion and determine what is and is not acceptable by way of thought and language. We need to force that power out of their hands and back into ours, preferably with a good sharp crack in the skull from a baseball bat. Now that's another thing we need to be free to at least think. We need to be able to encompass in our imaginations the concept of liberals and Jews being forced to do things that we want them to do. We need to envision them being compelled to change their behavior. We need to see them in our mind's eye being punished for what they have done in the past, and I don't mean by being scolded on blogs. The thought is father to the deed, as liberals know full well. If we are free to think disrespectfully of minorities and perverts and the system itself, then it's only a matter of time before we start thinking about doing something about them and bringing about genuine change and breaking out of the forced respect and subservience which democracy imposes on us. And that's what they're really terrified of. There is nothing that frightens a Jew or a liberal more than a white man whose mind is not under control.
Praise the Lord, the ammunition. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition, and we'll all stay free. Praise the Lord and swing into position. Can't afford to be a politician. Praise the Lord, we're all between perdition and the deep blue.
I'd also like to get into the subject of first impressions. First impressions are important, especially the first impression you make with the Northwest Front. While there's absolutely nothing wrong with a friendly or social motivation for getting a hold of us, we're not going to be your pen pals, and we're definitely not going to be your father figures. Again, nothing wrong with those needs, but that's not what the NF is here for. And no, I don't mean that to slight anyone personally, we just don't have the time to do the sort of hand-holding that a lot of people come here expecting. We do everything within our power to make it plain who and what we are and what we want to do, so that looky-loos take themselves away very quickly, mostly for their own sake. And usually that's what happens. Sometimes those looky-loos actually get back to us and say, "Hey, thanks for taking the time to get back to me. I was looking for friends and a little bit of social support, and I see you're not that. Best of luck to you." Now look, there's nothing wrong with wanting to interact with people who have similar interests, but again, not the purpose. Well, so what, right? Except it does matter. Harold always made it a point to bring up that white nationalism is something you need to put effort into, not extract something out of. Far too many people have some ulterior agenda when they get a hold of us, even if it's just subconscious, that is designed to benefit them and them only. Truth be told, these people will eventually get tired of involvement here and drift off to another group when they've decided they've gotten what they needed from us. We're not here to provide you things, you're here to provide your race things by way of the Butler Plan. Anything else is, pointedly, wrong. Here's the deal. Even though all of these motivations are reasonable in their own right, when you get a hold of the Northwest Front, it's a good idea not to let your personal issues just slip out and take control of the conversation. For one thing, it's really hard to take that back, and for another, you're identifying yourself as someone who's here to get some sort of support rather than help us out, and to be blunt, that's just not what we're looking for. I know that sounds mean, and it's probably a good thing that I'm running out of time and I need to get this all recorded, edited, and up on the website, because otherwise I'd go into details, and there would be an awful lot of people who would think I'm picking on them personally. Well, truth be told, this time I kinda am, because, oh heck, let's just say it. If you're gonna do things to get yourself negative attention from us like you would get negative attention from a parent figure, it isn't good. You're mostly identifying yourself as an overgrown baby. The other big bugaboo here is alcohol. People have a habit of leaving RFN comments drunk or emailing drunk, and no, I'm not just talking about one person. This has happened year after year after year, and they always end up doing or saying something incredibly embarrassing that, again, is a first impression, and they can't pull it back. And no, I'm not kidding. In years past, there have actually been people threaten violence against Harold and violence against me just because they got mad at us, purely because they were intoxicated and using the internet. That's really unfortunate, too, because all of the people that did this, and yes, there were many, actually presented some potential. There are plenty of jokes in society about drunk texting, but drunk internet use is actually worse because people are so willing to just let it hang out online with people they want to get familiar with and know as friends, and again, you need to think of the NF as something other than that because that's what we are. For the sake of clarity, I want to make something plain. I'm not saying don't get in contact with us if you're less than perfect. Far from it. What I am saying is when you do get in touch with us, make sure you're not running from some screwed up situation in your life or some screwed up condition somewhere in yourself, because history has shown that always comes out, sometimes in destructive ways. White nationalism and involvement in white nationalism, especially in the Northwest Imperative, is for serious adults that can leave their personal baggage at the door. I might sound especially cruel or callous here, and I might even come off as outright dismissive. That's not my purpose. My purpose is, though, to make it known to everybody far and wide that when you're using white nationalism as a substitute for something that's not going right in your own life, that has a way of manifesting itself rather rapidly and in some ugly ways. If you want to get a hold of us, make absolutely certain that you're ready to actually get a hold of us. And I'm saying that mostly for your benefit. Radio Free Northwest is brought to you by the Northwest Front. P.O. Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington, 98310. You can visit the party on our website at www.northwestfront.org. Until next week, comrades, hail victory.
Oh, what glorious pride of sorrow filled the name of 98. Yet my thought it still is beating perfectly.